Oh, man, it was a dark and stormy night in Gotham for the 76ers. Welcome to the Sixers Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wilmington University. Will Mew Works, Danny Pommels, Noah Levitt from NBC Sports, Philadelphia.com. Shout out to Ben Berry, our producer, for putting this all together. Hey, Noah, it was the good, the bad, and the ugly, I guess you could say, because we'll get to the good, but the bad and the ugly had to be that second quarter for the 76ers. Just a 23-point lopsided 39-16 beatdown for the Sixers in that quarter, which kind of spelled the end of the game, I guess, as the Knicks get a victory over the Sixers for the first time since April of 2017. It had been that long, a 15-game drought. A lot of nuances in this game, not necessarily good ones for the 76ers, but the same shots they had been taking just were not falling, and the Knicks capitalized on that. Did you see anything that stood out to you outside from the big picture as far as them not making shots and having a slow go of it in New York?
Yeah, the last time the Knicks beat the Sixers, it was the Justin Anderson, Alex Poitras era.
Wow.
Bit of a throwback. It's been a long time. Of course, Ben Simmons has still never lost to the Knicks. So he has that on his resume. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously part of it you just attribute to sometimes it's a rough shooting night. The Sixers were due for one of those after being one of the NBA's best three-point shooting teams early in the season. But as far as underlying concerns, yeah, this team is highly reliant on Joel Embiid in the half-court offense. They need to force turnovers and get stops to fuel their transition offense. That didn't happen. Kemba Walker and the Knicks were extremely hot from behind the arc. And Joel Embiid continues to not be 100% and continues to express that he's playing through this knee soreness. And he had a rough individual performance last night. Did draw 11 free throws, but 2 for 7 from the floor and turned the ball over 5 times and just didn't look very comfortable or confident with the decision-making. I think you also give the Knicks credit. Mitchell Robinson is a guy I personally like to watch a lot. And I think if he's healthy, is a player who could perhaps be a factor in a playoff series against Joel Embiid and maybe bother him a little bit. Someone with great length, has added some muscle this offseason and has these superb defensive instincts. But not very much went right for the Sixers in that quarter. So we could focus on plenty of things, but for me, yeah, what stood out is probably they need Joel Embiid to be the run stopper. And when he is not doing that, things can go downhill for this team. And just the collective loss of composure, I think, was also disappointing. They just kind of couldn't find a way to stop that run by New York, and things got very ugly in that second quarter.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Yeah, Mitchell Robinson, great motor, long guy who can definitely get off the floor and cause some havoc there underneath the basket. You mentioned Joel Embiid, and it wasn't even necessarily Mitchell Robinson being the disruptive force he can be. It just seemed like the shot selection by Joel was really puzzling. The team as a whole probably put up maybe 7 threes, 6, 7 threes before they even decided to go to the basket, and none of those threes were falling. Joel started it off with a step back three with two people in his face from the corner that, you know, was a little puzzling considering, you know, the TNT guys, if you were watching the broadcast, harped on it at halftime, just the fact that you're the game's most dominant big man, but yet you allow teams to, like, he's settling for the jumper instead of trying to force the issue underneath or, you know, really cause havoc in the interior. So are you attributing that all to the knee? Is he trying to rely on the jumper because the knee is kind of bothering him a bit and he doesn't want to force the issue? Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to know unless he explicitly
says that explicitly. Yeah,
I think it's fair to assume that the knee is at least influencing how he's playing. Like he said to reporters last night, it's not an excuse, but I've never really started a season like this, which I think means he's dealing with some real discomfort and that it's probably affecting his style of play a little bit. As we've talked about before, though, you don't want him to eliminate jump shots entirely from his game. That makes a lot of the low post skills and the pump fakes more dangerous. He does shoot the three ball very well for a center and is very good in the mid range. But I think it was very effective last night when the Sixers were struggling and he just decided, okay, I'm going to draw contact. And I think piled up 6 free throw attempts pretty quickly, got the opposing centers in a little bit of foul trouble, and then did just kind of go away from that, which I think was a little disappointing just as far as his approach to the game. But look, obviously they don't lose this game just because of Joel Embiid or just because of one player. I think across the board, none of their performances were very strong besides Tobias Harris, who put up 23, 9-9 and did a decent job in the matchup against Julius Randle. Pretty much everyone else had a rough night. You can put Tyrese Maxey, I think, in that group. Didn't do great in the minutes against his former Kentucky teammate, Emmanuel Quickley, and only scored 7 points on 3-for-9 shooting and continues to be a work in progress as a starting point guard for the Sixers.
Yeah, for sure. Joel Embiid with no field goals in the first half. You mentioned that those trips to the free throw line, which we are really customary, and we see that the new rule changes haven't really altered that for Joel Embiid getting to the line, where we have seen that James Harden's free throw attempts have really, you know, fallen by the wayside a bit. But we'll get into the Maxey Quickley matchup and what that might mean for the team in a little bit. You mentioned Tobias Harris, you know, him coming to his hometown, you know, being a New Yorker, he wasn't going to let, you know, an opportunity like that to shine. I'm sure he had people at the game fall by the wayside, but I'm sure he's definitely down in the dumps about the way the team performed, because I know he takes that personally and seriously. I'm curious, though, when you look at Joel and, you know, them trying to ride him in the half court and him being the run stopper, so to speak, it obviously begs the fact that, you know, Ben Simmons isn't there and they need some help in that regard. Is this kind of like an Achilles heel that we're seeing, that if the Sixers aren't in a position where Joel can kind of save them, that they don't have many other options that can do what Joel does, which is kind of slow down the other team by, you know, getting easy buckets on the other end or getting the other team in foul trouble or what have you?
I think it's an issue that would exist even if Ben Simmons was on this roster. Obviously, Simmons's lack of engagement and aggressiveness in the half court was a major storyline in the Hawks series. So it's not as if him being on this roster would single-handedly solve this. But yeah, I think absolutely it's tough when your center is the guy you have to depend on. And it becomes even a little more difficult when, one, he's not having a strong night as a passer and hitting open three-point shooters. And then, two, when those three-point shooters are just bricking a ton of shots. I mean, the Sixers were 2-for-15 at halftime of this game. Even if they were playing high-level defenses, this is probably a situation where they'd be trailing and wouldn't have much of a shot to beat a good Knicks team. I do think also Tobias Harris is probably in most situations the number two option, the guy where you feel, okay, you can dump it to him in the post or get him an isolation touch and he has a decent chance of scoring for you. But it's not ideal that Tobias Harris, in contrast to Joel Embiid, is below average at drawing free throws. It's not something he does very well. So if no one else is scoring and you get it to Harris and his jumper's not falling, there's this real likelihood of games going downhill, or as we saw in the fourth quarter of the Brooklyn game, of just no one on the team being able to score, whether that means free throws or field goals. So it's been a problem for a while. I think obviously in this hypothetical Ben Simmons trade, a lot of the names that are attractive are guys that can create shots in the half court. And that's just because This has been something the Sixers have lacked for quite some time.
I actually disagree with you on the Simmons thing. I'm not saying if Simmons was on the court, they would have won the game. But if you look at his strengths, defensively, he would have been slowing down some of that perimeter action, most likely. Maybe he was guarding Kemba, maybe whoever he was guarding, but maybe some of those open looks wouldn't have been falling for the Knicks. So maybe the margin wouldn't have been as great. And then I do think offensively, while you were completely correct that the scoring wouldn't have made much of a difference because Ben doesn't look to score as much, I do think the playmaking might have created more opportunities that the Sixers wouldn't get when, obviously, in the half court, things are really going to slow down if you're trying to dump it into Joel or he's kind of, you know, jab stepping and pump faking and trying to get to the basket. And guys are just kind of standing around waiting for him to do his thing. But bringing up Simmons, you know, I'll let you comment on that, what I just said, but bringing up Simmons, we do have to mention that Ali LaForce had a report before the game that, you know, people don't know out there. This team is not finding Ben any longer. They consider him as being in-house and trying to actually be productive toward getting back on the court with dealing with his mental health issues. And Ali LaForce had the report that Ben had been working out the team, working out with the organization, not the team, as early as yesterday, because the team was in New York for a shoot around. So I guess maybe while the team was in New York, Ben was at the facility in Camden working out with people from the organization. So who knows how this will play out? I think the next month will be really, you know, maybe the next 2 weeks even will really tell a lot about the progress that might be made there, because if he's working toward getting back on the court, there would hopefully be a date or expectation that, you know, some of these issues and his conditioning and his lack of wanting to be on the floor with the team because he's not mentally ready will kind of dissipate as, you know, time goes on. So I'm really looking at the next 30 days as like some important, you know, watershed moments. But what did you make of the fact that he's actually actively being with the team or the organization, I should say? I guess his words to them before the Brooklyn game, you know, may have really meant something.
Yeah, it does seem like that. I mean, the line from Doc Rivers was that it was a productive day, and it seems like the organization, everyone who's spoken about it on the record, has been consistent in saying they thought it was an important step in the right direction, just opening up that dialogue. I think it's tough, though, because with a lot of this Simmons situation, you have to filter through what is strategic and what is maybe a little more genuine. And it certainly makes sense for the Sixers to want other teams to hear that things are trending in a positive direction with Simmons.
Right. Absolutely.
And, you know, just perhaps to plant this idea that, yeah, it is somewhat realistic that he could actually play for us soon. Because I think it's been obvious for a while here, Ben Simmons playing and looking good, or, you know, just even looking similar to the player he was last season, would be very nice for the Sixers, just in terms of these trade negotiations and the quote-unquote leverage that they might be able to have. But yes, you know, it is positive, though, that he's with the team and he's not falling under this conduct detrimental, you know, category, that it does seem like there's this genuine desire to at least be around the Sixers organization in a way that maybe wasn't the case a week or two ago. But of course, for him to actually return to the court, you imagine there'd have to be quite a few practices under his belt. Right. And then he'd have to feel, you know, all importantly, in a good space mentally to suit up. And there are no indications, as far as I know, that that is currently the case. But yeah, just briefly to the point you were making on what Simmons might have been able to do with the half-court facilitation, I think it's a good point. And I think it is also important to recognize that Ben Simmons, the playoff player and the regular season player, there's a real distinction there. And
that is a great point.
The Hawks series, like, that was the worst version of Ben Simmons, the postseason player. We don't want to forget that it's not just that Simmons is really special at times in transition and creates a lot of transition offense in threes. In the half court, when he's attacking, he puts a lot of pressure on the defense, and he does kick out and find a lot of open teammates. And the Sixers do miss all of that. And Tyrese Maxey, for all of his positive qualities, is still so young and still so new to this role.
We'll get into Maxey and how that relates to Simmons after we take a quick timeout, but I just wanted to shift and get this last point in before we transition. We play four games. Two of those games, they've been at or around their average from last season for three-point attempts. And two of these games, they've blown way past that with back-to-back games of 41 attempts from three. It clearly didn't go the way they wanted last night in New York. But it seems like they're making a concerted effort to be a better three-point shooting team. I'm sure there are a lot of, you know, earmarks they want to hit when it comes to, you know, defense and production in the half court and, you know, all types, you know, sharing the basketball and assist numbers and things like that. But here they are, you know, putting up, you know, they changed the roster to accentuate the three-point shot with bringing in George Niang. Hopefully, you know, Isaiah Joe hasn't made the strides of the preseason in the regular season that we've seen in the preseason, but you see a concerted effort to putting up more threes, and it didn't work out well in New York. It worked out great against OKC and really started off well against Brooklyn. But I'm curious if you see the same thing, that they're trying to really, you know, pound 3-point shots from, you know, whenever it is in the game, but they're really trying to make a concerted effort to get up more three-pointers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just taking a glance at it this morning from Cleaning the Glass, they are now a top half team.
Wow, okay.
Frequency there, they rank 13th as of this morning, which is a big difference between being bottom five last year. Yeah. I think Doc Rivers, my sense is that he's not analytically inclined in terms of he's going to set specific numbers and then he's going to berate the Sixers if one game they only shoot 28 threes. His standards that he finds, you know, most valuable are things that might not be as tangible, like, you know, just is the ball moving well, or are we getting good shots in rhythm, are we
playing? Like you said in the past, he doesn't care where the points come from.
Exactly, yeah. So he's probably looking at more all-encompassing stats, just like offensive rating, and then he's also just valuing what the film and his eyes tell him about how the Sixers offense looks. But he did express, you know, during training camp that he'd like Tobias Harris to shoot more threes. I think Harris put up four in the first quarter of that game, which is not true to form for him. So absolutely something that these players are being coached to do more. And I think it makes sense. Obviously, it doesn't look as great on a night when the shots aren't falling. But in terms of the approach, I don't see anything glaringly wrong with it, as long as you don't take it to an extreme of attempting early shot clock threes where you're not giving yourself a chance to rotate the defense and put pressure on the defense. But taking more threes, sure, it's something we've wanted for the Sixers for a while. And they are track direction in the early stages.
Yeah, Doc Rivers mentioned after the game that what they lacked in the early going was the physicality that they think that the Sixers lacked the physicality that the Knicks had, because a lot of their shots that they were taking in the early going were just one pass and then a jumper, as opposed to, you know, setting screens or running some action in order to produce those shots. So he feels like that's something that kind of got sucked out of them early on. Let's take a break here. We'll get into more with Tyrese Maxey and Ben Simmons and how they relate to each other as it goes to particularly last night's game and what we've seen here in the early going. Of course, the Detroit Pistons coming up, Sixers a four-game homestand here. So the redemption cometh swiftly is what I'm trying to say. They'll be back on the court Thursday. But let's take a timeout and get into more of the nuances of the Sixers squad. Ready to make a move? A Wilmington University education can take you where you want to go. WilmU works online or in person. Learn more at wilmu.edu.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Interesting, Noah. I'm always fascinated by when the Sixers are on national TV to hear what the announcers and how people view the team that we are, you know, intimately, you know, tied to look at and study every day, just about, because they get a lot of stuff wrong. But interesting things that they say sometimes, and something I picked up from the broadcast last night, is they considered, I think it was Brian Anderson and Stan Van Gundy, they considered Shake Milton as a missing member of the starting lineup, as opposed to it being Tyrese Maxey's job exclusively. So like, Shake obviously is out with the right ankle sprain. I thought that was kind of they kind of misspoke there, because, you know, Tyrese has been running with the ones. But then I kind of, you know, checked myself and thought, well, you know, Doc has said that it's kind of a competition, and, you know, he's definitely more of a guy to lean toward a veteran player rather than a younger player. So did you pick up on that? Had you been thinking that? Because I had been thinking that Shake would be with the second unit, and more of that Jamal Crawford role that Doc had talked about. But am I amiss on that?
I don't think so. My ears perked up there as well. And yeah, to be honest, my initial reaction was that was not on the money, and that maybe that was coming from someone who just doesn't follow the Sixers.
Very casual. But, right. Yeah.
I think it's fair to think.
But I think the point I'm trying to make with the struggles that we've seen, some struggles we've seen from Maxey, particularly last night when he was outplayed by Manuel Quickly, is that something that we should be considering or looking that direction?
Right. Yeah, I think it's fair to think that it's not set in stone yet that Maxey will be the starting point guard when Shake Milton, who's been out with this right ankle sprain, is healthy to return. And one small argument in favor of thinking that way is last night, Doc Rivers made sure to stagger minutes such that Tyrese Maxey played with the second unit and Isaiah Joe was removed from the rotation. So he seems to like that idea of Maxey, playing with the bench, and who knows, maybe that does carry over to when Shake Milton is healthy. As you noted, he didn't last for long, but he briefly categorized it as a competition during the preseason. Maybe he still sees it that way. And he has been, in a fair way, but critical once or twice of Maxey, and saying, look, he's young, and there's a lot of things he has to learn about playing point guard. Shake Milton is a little less young, has been a starting point guard before. So at least if you're looking at it in that very narrow sense, I guess that would be a reason to start Shake Milton. I am curious exactly what's going to happen when Milton is deemed healthy enough to return. I think my sense is that Tyrese Maxey would still be the favorite to start, but I'm on the same page with you that comment did make me think a little, and I think I'm at the point where you'd expect it to be Maxey, but you wouldn't be shocked if Doc went with Shake Milton.
If you have not already, you need to check out Noah Levick's three observations on our website, NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. He has them after every game. And one of the things you brought up was, the Sixers are getting more offense from having Tyrese Maxey in the lineup as opposed to Ben Simmons. But Ben Simmons earned an all-star nod last season for a reason, because he brings things that Maxey can't as well. So And a lot of them are obvious. Obviously, you get more three-point shooting. Maxey didn't have a great night at that last night in New York. But defensively, playmaking-wise, Ben Simmons is elite. Give us some more insight on what you think the Sixers are losing there. And I guess I'm looking at this as like kind of like a three-headed monster, like Simmons obviously not being a part of it. But if you're just looking at the ball handling and the point guard position, we just talked about Tyrese and Shake. So, like, how can they make that work with Ben's absence? Because if they're – they can't replace what Ben brought to the team, but they also need to make up for his absence with someone on the roster, and they're not quite getting that at a consistent pace with Tyrese Maxey. So I guess that would offer an opportunity to Shake, but – just can you clarify that more and explain how you're seeing it?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't even know if I'd frame it as the Sixers are just getting more net offensively from Tyrese Maxey. I mean, even Maxey. Ben Simmons is someone who's, you know, going to give you around 15 points per game. And then, of course, is very valuable in terms of the assist numbers and the rebounding and all those other things he brings to the table. Obviously there's a massive disparity there on defense. But yeah, I think Shake Milton, when he's healthy, maybe he's not starting. I wouldn't expect him to start, but I will definitely be playing key minutes for this team. One thing that did come to mind last night is that Doc Rivers on several occasions last year identified difficulty handling ball pressure as a reason that Milton wasn't playing or wasn't getting important minutes. So for last night in particular,
we've seen that from Furkan Korkmaz, who he's had running the point. We've seen that, you know, from Isaiah Joe as well. And he got sent on the bench for that. So I guess that's not just a unique situation to Shake, though.
Yeah, I see it in a few ways. So one is that I think just the Knicks and teams like the Knicks are somewhat rare in the modern NBA, where at least during the regular season, not every team gives 100% effort on defense every night. Like Tom Thibodeau is going to demand that. And you're going to get a playoff-like game when you face the New York Knicks. So I think it's inevitable that many opponents and many guards will struggle against that. And then I think, like, secondarily, Ben Simmons has a unique advantage at dealing with ball pressure because he is 6'10" and much, much stronger physically than the average point guard. And he also just, I think, likes and embraces physicality. We've seen him give some of those sort of Aussie rules like shoulder shrugs and like say what you want about Simmons, but that's a part of his game that's always been there. That
and he's probably just as quick with the basketball as those guys. Yeah.
In a non-scoring context, I think Ben Simmons is one of the more physical guards, quote-unquote, in the league. Of course, many Sixers fans would like to see that more in terms of attacking the basket. But I think just dealing with ball pressure, yeah, that's not a concern you have to near the same degree with Ben Simmons. And I think Shake Milton, too, is similar to Tyrese Maxey in that he's more of a combo guard. Like, he's not a traditional point guard who's necessarily used to being in this role of, okay, it's your job to run the offense and to get us into our sets. And sometimes that means shrugging off ball pressure and physicality. So yeah, long story short there, I think ball pressure is something that probably is likely to bother the Sixers more without Ben Simmons on the roster. But yeah, regardless, you would expect that Shake Milton being back in the fold will at least help this team to some degree.
And no real word, no update on his situation, right? I mean, he's still out with the right ankle injury or ankle injury.
He's looked decent to me for a while when we've gotten to see him, just
because he's been like working on side courts.
Yeah, like after practice, he works with Tyler Lashbrook, one of the Sixers skill development coaches, and, you know, just runs through drills and get shots up. There doesn't seem to be anything too wrong, but yeah, evidently they don't want to rush him back, and it's not clear yet exactly when he'll return.
Not sure if it'll come to fruition for him, but props to Tobias Harris as he continues to be Mr. Dependable. You mentioned his 23 points, 10 of 18 shooting. And not much. You know, I jokingly sent a text in our group chat that this would be a short podcast after the Sixers got beat up last night. But I guess it really not a lot of good things to talk about. Tobias Harris probably being one of the only ones, even though he was still a minus 11, as the team just did not have it in New York. But lucky for them, four home games and the Detroit Pistons are on deck. So we'll see. Look for them to bounce back Thursday. J. Cole at Wells Fargo Center tonight. Noah, are you popping up for that?
I did. Back in the day, I went to a J. Cole concert, so I'm good.
Oh, okay. You already got a J. Cole concert under your belt. Yeah,
I got one under my belt, so I think I'm good. But I'm sure that'll be a fun night for the folks in attendance.
I will be there because I'll be working, and I'll pop out and check it out. Funny, though, because Steve Graham, our Sixers producer. What do you want to call Steve?
He's a video producer editor, I believe.
There we go. Okay. There we go. Video producer editor.
Does it all. He's the best. Yeah.
Yeah. He's super sharp. He was there way after we left last night. I did NBC 10's 11 o'clock news, and he was probably there at about 12:30, 1 o'clock. Steve is engaged and getting married soon. So props to that. But I bring up Steve and I bring up J. Cole because you do not think those two worlds would intersect. But Steve Graham met J. Cole, bro. He told me last night because he used to work in Florida and he drove from Philly to Florida at like 17 hours straight. And he said he pulled into a 7-Eleven in Jacksonville and there was J. Cole on a bike having a Slurpee. So he's staring at J. Cole, you know, he's like, am I delirious? Like, I think that's, I some dude on a bike in the middle of Jacksonville, like, you don't think like that's going to be, you know, one of the greatest rappers in our current generation. But it was J. Cole. Steve said they dapped each other up. He asked him if he was J. Cole. He said, yeah. He said he was super cool. There you go. That's the Steve Graham, J. Cole story. I enjoy hearing it from him. He had a smile on his face the whole time he was telling it. So you've been to J. Cole concert. Steve Graham has actually met the man. And he said this is about 2017. So he was definitely like highly regarded. I don't know if that was before Forest Hills Drive, but this classic moment, Steve Graham and J. Cole linking up.
And you brought that up because Tobias Harris looks like J. Cole?
That's great. That's a great segue. He'll be in town. Maybe Tobias will pop out to the concert. Maybe J. Cole will bring him out or something like that. They probably about the same size. Almost. I guess J. Cole's about 6'5". Tobias
he's,
like 6'7".
He's pretty like good at basketball. He's actually played professional basketball. Yeah.
We've seen the videos, right? We've seen the videos. It'll be a fun for the Sixers to be back home. Hope you guys can come out to the arena and enjoy one of these four home games, support the team. And thanks for supporting us here on the Sixers Talk Podcast. For our man, Noah Levick, for Ben Berry, I'm Danny Pommels. We'll see you next time. We're brought to you by Wilmington University, WilmU Works.